Okay, this week you have a big parasha. It's the biggest parasha in the Torah. The largest parasha, the most psukim, the most words. 176 psukim. I'm not sure I know how to count that high. 176 psukim.
Yeah.
Parashas, what?
Are you leaning?
Yitz Hashem.
Okay, but with all the repetition...
Exactly. You have to be very careful. The repetition, it's not all repetition. There are nuances. And each one of the 12 Nisim in the Kriya, not all the same. You have to really keep your eye on the ball. There are nuances it's not just pure repetition. You have to be careful. And it's a very large parasha, and everyone knows we say this every year. And likewise in Tehillim, in Mizmar, which Mizmar? 119. Kuf Yutes. There are likewise 176 psukim. And Masechet Bava Basra has how many daf? The largest Masechet in Shas has 176.
Minus one.
The daf Aleph also counts. The Shar Blad also counts. Why not? Mm-hmm. Why doesn't it look like you have to know everything it says in the Sharblat, all the different Mepharshim, the also 176 Dafim. Somehow this number 176 is a significant number which represents a bracha, represents it's not for nothing that we have.
I remember now, I was talking to someone you know last night about this, and I'd forgotten what the significance of the number is. Now I remember. It's 8 times 22.
Oh, right. I think we once spoke about this one year.
Yes, we did.
8 times 22, right? 8 times 22. There are 22 letters in the Aleph base, and 8 represents lemala miderech hateva, or 8 represents the continuation. The cycle continues. What is the 8th day of the week? What is the 8th day of the week? Sunday. Sunday is the 8th day of the week because the number 8, we more often than not, when we mention the number 8, we mention 8 in reference to Lemala Miderech HaTeva. But that's not the only understanding of the number 8. The number 8 represents a concept of renewal. Renewal. When you finish the cycle of 7, Hashem made the world in 7 days, and we then renew the cycle. So 22 represents the totality of the letters of everything. There are 22 letters in the Aleph Beis. Hashem created the world with the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis. And Hashem created the world in 7 days. When we take the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis and we renew, we enter into a new cycle of time that captures our commitment to the Koyvei Hashem Yachalifu Koyach. Those that yearn for Hashem, their strength is renewed. And it's precisely right after Shavuos, we lay in Parshas Nosoi, which has 176 psukim, because Matan Torah is, it's like you take your car to the gas station to fill up. It's a moment of renewal. A moment of renewal. There are 22 letters in the Aleph Beis, and Matan Torah is the moment of receiving the Torah again, a renewal of the Torah. And here we have 22 multiplied by 8. The number 8 is significant in this calculation of 176. It's a moment of renewal. So at least we should take strength in this principle that Parshas Nosoi is a zman of renewal. Renewal, and we should tap into that principle of the Koyvei Hashem Yachalifu Koyach. Those that yearn for Hashem, their strength should be renewed with vigor and power and commitment. Resolve and all these nice words, which make us feel very good. Okay, now let's discuss something else. This parsha is important in that it represents the Hakamas HaMishkan. Now, I know you'll say to me, how could you say that? The Hakamas HaMishkan took place in Parshas Shemini. Parsha Shemini, Moshe Rabbeinu, he put up the Mishkan for the eighth time. On the 23rd day of Adar, he put up the Mishkan and he took it down. He practiced for 7 days. And then Vayhi Bayom HaShmini, which was the first day of Nisan, Moshe put up the Mishkan for the last time, and the Mishkan remained standing firm. Okay, that's absolutely correct. But in this parsha, Rashi tells us in a few places that many of the mitzvahs that are presented here in this parsha were taught on that day, on the day when the Mishkan was erected. And again, Rashi says this not necessarily on that day, but this is the beginning of the part of the process of inauguration. And indeed, we learn about the end of the parasha. The bulk of the parasha tells us about the gifts and the korbanos that the nesiim, the princes, the leaders of each of the shvatim offered as a gift in offering to inaugurate the Mishkan. Here we have 12 days. Bayom HaRishon, Nasi Levnei Yehuda. The second day we have Yisachar, Bechula. We go through the first 12 days of Chodesh Nisan. And each one of these days, the Nasi of each individual Shevet came forth representing his tribe and offered a lavish karban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ketores and a set of karbanos. In addition, we learned that they offered these wagons, which we'll discuss in a few moments. This is the beginning. Yet as an introduction to this beginning, the Torah presents us with four parshiyos, four mitzvahs, four different concepts, four different themes before we actually come to the inauguration. Number one, the law of Vishalchu min hamachaneh. The Torah tells us about a Zov, a Mitzoyra, a Tamei Meis. They have an obligation to distance themselves from the Mishkan, from the Mokom of the Hashroas Hashchina. A Tamei Meis only has to distance himself a little bit. A Zov, a little more. A Mitzoyra, even more. Beautiful, very nice. It's a little short parsha. Okay, it's a little short parsha, but it tells us the basic principles of don't come too close. Know your place. If you're not 100% tohar, don't enter. Respect. Distance yourself from the place where Hashem is resting His divine presence. Depending on your situation, you may have to distance yourself more than others. And then we come to another halacha. The second halacha in the parasha is, what happens if you lie to your fellow man? Your fellow man approaches you and says, "Sir, is it not true that I lent you $1,000? Please, I need the money. Return the money." And this fellow says, "I don't know what you're talking about. I don't owe you a penny. And I swear in the name of God, I don't owe you a penny." And then later you confess, "Indeed, I lied. I stole from you money." So we have a very detailed discussion in the Torah what needs to be done. The person has to confess. He must bring a carbon osham. He has to pay back the penalty plus an additional fifth. Okay? Next parasha. A soita. A woman is unfaithful to her husband. A woman has an affair. Or, for that matter, a man. It's part of the parasha. The parasha of soita, Rashi makes it very clear that it's a two-way street. If a man is not faithful to his wife, the waters of soita will only test a woman, provided that the man has been faithful as well. If the man is not faithful, then the parasha will, then this parasha of soita is not relevant for his wife either. There is a significant chunk of the parasha describes the relationship between a man and a woman, husband and wife. And then the next section is a nazir. A person wakes up one day and he decides, you know what? I don't want to go to funerals anymore. I will not come in contact with the dead. I don't like wine. Wine is not my thing. And you know, I'm tired of going to the barber every so often. So no haircuts, no wine, and no contamination to the dead, which are things that ordinarily a person needs to do. This is part of life, but a person is going to make himself holy by distancing himself from these three things. Okay, very nice. And then we begin, the celebrations begin. The Olympics begin. The celebration begins. The ceremony begins. Vayihi, the Nesim, come forward. Vayihi, b'yoim chalois Moshe, the day when Moshe finished putting up the Mishkan for the last time, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Now, for the next 12 days, each one of the Nesim will come forward and offer a set of korbanos and gifts to give honor to Hashem, to sanctify the new Mishkan. Now, excuse me, it's very nice, the end of the parasha, but what do these four mitzvahs have anything to do with the major theme of this parasha? I mean, the parasha begins with Shevet Levi carrying the Mishkan. Okay, that's the very, very beginning. It's really a continuation of last week's parasha. We are describing the role of the Levim in what they're going to, how they are in charge of the Mishkan. And the expectation would be it would be a seamless, perfect continuation after we finish defining the role of the guardians of the Mishkan. Who's in charge? Who's the boss? You know, you build a building. You have to have a maintenance crew. You have to have an administration to run the building. After we finish describing everyone's role in this structure, we then let the celebrations begin. After the first Aliyah, we would expect that we should immediately go into, or really after the second, after we finish describing the role of the Levim and the Kohanim in guarding and maintaining and serving in this facility, now the celebration shall begin. Vayihi b'yom chalos Moshe. If the parsha would go from the first Aliyah, and it would go the first Aliyah and the second Aliyah, everything makes a lot of sense. And when you get to Shlishi, the expectation is to skip from where in Shlishi, which deals with telling the people who are contaminated to get lost, we should skip all that and skip the parasha of swearing falsely, which seems like this has no connection to this parasha, and skip the laws of the Sota and the laws of the Nazir, and go right, let's get right into things, and let's go right into Chamishi. Vayihi b'yom chalos Moshe. Okay, by the way, there's also Birchas Kohanim, which is also sandwiched there, also in the middle, but let's put that aside for a moment. What's going on here? What is going on here? Why in the world is the Torah being mafsik? Is the Torah being mafsik between describing in detail who's in charge, describing the construction of the Mishkan, the putting everything in order, the carrying of the Mishkan, and today's the big day. And now that we have a system in place, we've constructed this magnificent edifice to house Hashem's divine presence. We've appointed a sophisticated network of workers and guardians, custodians, to attend to its needs. Now the celebration shall begin. No. Time out. I want to tell you about four very interesting laws I want to tell you about there are people who are contaminated that are not allowed to be in the various machanas. And I want to tell you the law, what happens if you swear falsely to your friend that you don't owe him any money, even though, by the way, we already know that because we learned that already in the previous parasha. And I want to tell you about infidelity. And I want to teach you about this fellow called a Nazir who doesn't drink wine, doesn't go to a funeral, and doesn't, and has nice long hair, is on strike, will not go to a barber. What's going on here? What's all this about? Why are we mafsik with these four parashas? So I want to suggest to you something very simple. And that is, these four parashas, they define the four major elements in our life that are critical to critical to appreciate before we can come into the Beis Hashem. The ceremony can begin. What are the four different elements about? Just to summarize, the first element is Bein Adam LaMakom. The second element is Bein Adam LaChaveroi. The third is Bein Adam LeIshtoi. There's a very big difference between how you interact with your fellow man and how you interact with your spouse. Everyone knows that. That's a whole different. There are people that are very good to their wife and children, and they're rotten apples to the world. And there are people that are wonderful out there, reputation in the world as being wonderful, wonderful people. And if you'll ask their wife what she thinks of her husband, you'll have a very, very different report. It's a whole different world, a whole different dimension of life, of your relationship with your wife and family. And then there's a fourth element, which is the most fascinating of them all. And that's the relationship you have with yourself. And that's the nazir. Now let me explain. The first element is Bein Adam LaMakom. The Ribbono Shel Olam is resting his divine presence in Machane Shechina. Who are you? How do you relate to that? Do you have a connection to Hashem? Where do you stand relative to Hashem? You have to know your place. That's the very, before we begin the inauguration of the Mishkan, of Hashem's Makom of Ashuas Hashchina, there's a message being sent to Klal Yisrael. Know your place. Every person is different. There are some people that can identify as a Zav, some as a Mitzoyra, some as a Tamil Nefesh. Three examples of three different types of situations that one finds himself that is at odds with Hashem. And every person, they're different. A Zav goes midway. A Tami Meis, not so much. And a Mitzayra, you got a big problem. You have a big problem on Mitzayra. You have some very significant spiritual deficiencies. And Hashem doesn't want to know from you. Hashem wants you out. The first intro, before we can come to inaugurate the Mishkan, is a person has to define his relationship between himself and Hashem. The second message that the Torah is sending us is define your relationship with your fellow man. The kicheish ba'am Yisrael. Are you a person who is a phony? Are you a person who lies? The pasuk says, the kicheish ba'am Yisrael. You lie to your friend. You deceive your friend. You present yourself as one person, but that's not who you really are. Behind your friend's back, you'll stab him. You'll take advantage. You present yourself to your fellow man different than what is true. The third message Hashem says, define your relationship with your wife, with your family. Is there a healthy, you have a healthy home, healthy marriage? That has to be defined. And then the Nazir, what does it say about the Nazir? A Nazir recognizes weakness in himself. Chazal say a Nazir, he comes to the Mikdash, he sees the Sota, he sees what can happen to a person who's out of control, who's not disciplined. And when a person, many type of different Ma'amar Chazal that say the same thing, the story of the famous Nazir, he was walking on the road and he came to a puddle of water and he saw his reflection in the water. And he said, wow, you know, I'm a good looking guy. I'm a movie star. I can go and I can do every avera in the world. And he realized that he's vulnerable. He's not a disciplined person. And it won't take much. It'll just take a spark for him to find himself in the wrong place and end up doing horrible averas. Because he realized he's not a disciplined person. He needs musar. So what did he do? Yazir atzmai min hayayin. He dedicated a time of his life, a period of time, to go to boot camp, to discipline his neshama. It's between you and yourself. It's nothing to do with Hashem. It's nothing to do with your wife. Nothing to do with your fellow man. The whole essence of a nazir is discipline. Discipline yourself. Yazir atzmoi min hayayin. You're not devoting yourself to Hashem. The process of nazirus is a process of self-discipline. Not to enjoy the good of this world, not forever, for 30 days. If you need more, so do it for a year, do it for 6 months. The minimal term is 30 days. It's boot camp. It's discipline. I know someone who went to the Marines. His family is not so happy about this, but he went to the Marines. Okay, he went to the Marines. Very, very interesting. A lot of very interesting stories. I've been talking about Yom Tov, and you know, when he comes home to his at home, when his father asks him to do something, he says, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir." And he was sitting by the Sa'uda, and he wasn't eating. Why aren't you eating? My mom is not eating. My mom is serving. I cannot eat until my mom also sits down and eats. It's not right. I can't do that. My mom also has to be eating before I can enjoy the food. Sir, you understand? Yes, sir. Discipline. Discipline. I remember when I was in high school, we had a teacher in the English department. And he was once, I don't know, in the army or the, I don't know what he was, and he used to beg us, all of you yeshiva guys, you're missing out. Every one of you should go sign up with the army and go to boot camp. Then you'll become people. And he's 100% right. 100% right. I mean, obviously we can't go to boot camp, and you know, and Flatbush is not going to work well. But there's no nonsense in the military, in boot camp, in training. You don't behave. You learn very quickly what it means to follow orders and behave, become disciplined. And that's taka chaval. It's a chaval that we don't have a society where we learn discipline. And a nazir is, to a degree, an exercise in self-discipline. Beit adam la'atzmai. This is the Torah's message to us. You want to come into my house? You want me to rest my divine presence among you, in your camp, in the center of the camp? Before you can come into my home, you can invite me to be the center of your lives. There are four things you have to learn. You have to learn your place. Learn your makom. Not everyone is the same. There are different madrigot, different types of people. No one is perfect. Everyone has to know where to stand in their relationship with the divine presence. There are levels. There are different levels. You have to know your place in relationship with Hashem. With the makom of the Hashruas Hashchina. Not everyone can walk into the Beis HaMikdash, where Hashem resides. Some have to distance themselves a little bit, some a little bit more, some even more. There's a lesson, a subtle lesson in know your relationship with Hashem. Number two, be an honest person. Perfect your relationship with your fellow man. Number three, perfect your relationship with your spouse and family. And number four, self-discipline. When you have mastered these four elements, these four dimensions of your life, we can continue the ceremony. The parasha begins with the conclusion of the construction of the Mishkan and the appointment of all of the custodians and network of administrators that will care and serve. And when we expect now, let's begin the ceremony, stop. We're not going to start the ceremony and move in to the building. We will not have a Chanukah Sabayis until we make it clear Hashem demands from a human being, from Klal Yisrael, to perfect four dimensions of his existence in this world. Know where you stand, Bein Adam L'Mokoyim, Bein Adam L'Chaveroi, Bein Ish L'Ishtoi, and the most important, where do you stand in relationship to yourself? You know, there's a Rambam. I still can't find this Rambam. I don't know. Maybe it's not even true. I'm willing to doubt it's even true. But it says that Erev on Yom Kippur, a person has to ask forgiveness from three people. You have to ask forgiveness from Hashem. Chotosi, Avisi, Poshati. Chazal said that Hashem will not forgive you until you ask forgiveness from your fellow man. If you harm your fellow man, don't come to me, Hashem, and ask me forgiveness until you ask forgiveness from your fellow man. And then supposedly, I don't know who says this, that supposedly the Rambam writes this somewhere, you have to ask forgiveness from yourself. A person is in a very complicated relationship with himself. A person blames himself. He hates himself. A person subconsciously, as many people know, they love themselves, they think they love themselves. Yeah, that's another type of problem. Some people have that problem. But there's a group of people out there in the world that hate themselves, subtly. Subtly, it's not so obvious. They hate themselves. They have complaint against themselves, why they did this, they should have done this, they could have, they would have, they should have, only they had. They made mistakes, they blame themselves. Forgive yourself. Ask yourself mechila. You talk to yourself the whole day. It's probably the most significant relationship you have in this world is with yourself. Forget about your wife and your children and your friends and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Person is in a relationship with himself, and that has to be rectified before you enter into Yom Kippur. And in this parsha, Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, we start off with the conclusion of the erection of the Mishkan and the appointment of the custodians. And then Hashem says, time out. We will not begin until we lay down the law. What's this all about? There are four dimensions in life. Me and you, you and your friend, you and your wife, and you and yourself. Straighten that out. Put that in order, and then we will begin the ceremony. We'll begin with, we have in the middle Birchas Kohanim, which is really the opening. Birchas Kohanim is the opening of the ceremony. Now the Shechina is here, the Shechina is resting, the custodians in this Mokum will bless you, and we will now inaugurate the Mishkan with the Nesiyim. Okay, let's go to another idea, new idea, another idea. We learn here in this parasha about the gift, the unique gift that the Nesiim offered on this day. Well, you know, on the day of inauguration, you have to give a gift. You're supposed to give a gift when you come to an inauguration, a Chanukah Sabayis. People, they come to Chanukah Sabayis, what do? You bring a gift. You bring a gift. So today, this Mishkan was erected on Aleph Nisan. So each one of the Nesim, they presented, the princes of the tribes, they presented wagons, a gift, very nice. What gift? They bought a new car, a new automobile for the Mishkan, new flatbed truck. It wasn't a flatbed, it was a covered Jeep. No, some vehicles to transport the Mishkan in the desert. Egg lois tsav. Tsav means a turtle. A turtle has a shell. They could have just got flat bed trucks that are completely open on the top, but they made nice. They have like a nice coverings. This was like an innovation, a new model, the latest new model from Ford Electric, an electric powered flatbed truck with a nice covering on top with two driving wheels, so you can have two drivers at the same time. Okay, a nice eglois tzav. Eglois tzav. What's this all about? So Rashi tells us the story. Rashi tells us the inside story, what happened. When Moshe Rabbeinu issued a call for Klal Yisrael to contribute money, gifts, for the construction of the Mishkan, the wealthiest members of society, who were the Nesiim, they sat back and they said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have a matching gift, matching fund. We're going to give nothing. Let everyone else give, and whatever is missing at the very end, we'll fill in. We'll double it. Okay, we'll double it, whatever, just make up some. Whatever is lacking, we'll fill in. It sounds like a very nice idea, a very noble idea. Let everyone bring whatever they need. Whatever you're missing out again, we'll fill in. So what happened? Everyone was very generous, and everyone gave, and basically, there was nothing left to give. There was nothing left to give. The only thing that was left to give were the stones, the precious stones that are put on the choshen of the Kohen Gadol and on the shoulder of the Kohen Gadol. So the Nesiim, okay, they were, it appears, from the way Rashi describes, were a little bit taken aback. They were surprised. They thought they would be needed to give millions of dollars, gold, silver, techeles, argamon, who knows what. No, we don't need that. That's already been taken care of. A couple of stones. They're not cheap. These are precious stones. They cost a nice fortune, but it's not, if you don't give the stones, we'll get by. The Mishkan will go on, so we won't have the stones. The Mishkan, the main edifice, is complete. The Kohanim have their clothing. No, so we're missing a couple of stones. We'll figure it out. It was a bezoyon for the Nesiim. The people who were expected to shell out a nice chunk of their wealth in honor of Hashem were out to lunch. They made their pledges. We'll give. Nowhere to be found. And then, when all of a sudden, look at that, the Mishkan's already built. And here they're embarrassed. Their name doesn't appear in the book, on the plaque. Okay. There is taka one thing we don't have yet. We don't have the stones. You can give the stones. Very nice. They gave the stones. What would have been if they wouldn't have given the stones? It seems like Klal Yisrael, they would get it another way. Anyway, it's Chazal say the stones came miraculously. They came in clouds. They were just dropped off in the cloud, whatever. It was a very, very big bizarre to the wealthy, the elite of society. And this happens all the time. People are very wealthy pledge. They pledge big money, and they don't pay their pledges. Just all for show. All for show. When you need them, they're not there. When they want to do something, they make themselves known with their wealth. And then when you need them, we'll give. And then you have to go back to them 1,000 times to redeem their pledges. And they have to pull teeth. That happens, unfortunately, very often. They were put to shame. So this time they said, we're not going to be put to shame. This time we don't want to do teshuva. And therefore, from the get-go, now there's a second round of donations. A second round when you inaugurate the day of inauguration is a fundraising event. Isn't that Jewish life? Isn't that the way it works in Judaism? Everything is an opportunity to make money. Everything. Everything is an opportunity for fundraising, for kupa soir. Everything. Everything. Believe you ain't seen a claw. Anything that happens, oh, we're going to pull on your heartstrings to get you to give money. So it's inauguration day. No. Donations. Donations. We don't want to be put to shame. We learned our lesson. They gave these exquisite wagons, state-of-the-art, latest technology, Tesla, electric, covered with this beautiful covering in honor to transport the Mishkan in the desert. Okay, that's Rashi, a modern version of Rashi. Now let's elaborate upon this a little bit more. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but let's analyze, what did the Nesi'im at the end of the day end up giving when there was the first call for donations? Stones that go on the breastplate and the shoulder of the Kohen Gadol. What did they give in the second round when they did Teshuvah? Wagons. Question. Why? What is the Hashkocha Pratis of being punished, being humiliated by giving stones? For the choshen, that's a very beautiful thing. Colored, precious stones that light up when you ask the Kohen Gadol questions. One, the holiest man, the holiest Jew, is wearing on his chest stones that carry the names of the Jewish people. I mean, what's so terrible? And what's bedafka? They give wagons? Come on, wagons? What is this all about? You need a transport vehicle? You would think they would give, I don't know, kalim for the Mishkan, something that would be used. This is transportation. You know, transportation, this is not the chiluk of the avoda. What is the hashkocha? What is going on here? Eglas sof, covered wagons, versus the humiliation of giving the stones and the choshen? The answer is very simple. From all of the items in the entire Mishkan, including the structure, the clothing, there's only one thing in the entire Mishkan upon which it says that it has to be carried, and that is stones. V'nosa Aharon. I'm not quoting the pasuk exactly, but remember, my guess will correct me. Aaron will carry. This week's parasha, naso, is to carry, to lift up, carry upon his heart the names of the Jewish people. He will carry upon his shoulder. He will carry. I have to go back to the parasha's tetzaveh. He will carry upon his shoulder the names, the avne, the ephod is to carry. Carrying is a burden. The nasa aharon eshemay sam. He will carry their names on his heart. He will carry their names on his shoulder. No matter how beautiful these stones are, and how exquisite, how magical, how spiritual, the bottom line is, you are a burden. You are a burden to someone else. Aaron is a noble man. Aaron HaKohen is the holiest Jew. And the holiest Jew, you know what he does? He accepts upon himself burdens. He carries his merit, whether it's symbolic, whether it's literal. He carries the weight of the Jewish people. But you, the Nesi'im, you wealthy multi-billionaires, you're a burden. Well, who do you think you are? You think you're so special, you have all this money, and you have these beautiful palaces, and you support all the kohelim. You're a burden to society. You're a burden. Every yokel gave $5 to buy a little mashal of gold to plate, the plate, the kroshim, a little bit of gold for the arayim, some wood, some tcheles. All of the things that the Jewish people have given, they serve. They give honor. The wood, it stands. It's the support. It covers, it gives honor to the Kohanim. It covers their naked bodies. It supports the weight of the Mishkan. Everyone in Klal Yisrael is serving in a role as support. Honor, service, offerings. You, the Nesiim, the wealthiest people in the world, the Bill Gates, and the Jobs family, and this Gevir and that Gevir, you're a burden. You're a burden to us. It's true, it's very nice. Colored stones on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, ahaha. Ooh la la, wow, nice. The stones, they light up. When you say the Shema Hashem, he wears on his shoulders big stones etched the Shemos of the Jewish people. Beautiful. But let's be practical here. The Pasuk says, Vinosa. He has to carry it. It doesn't say the word carry in regard to anything else that's given in the Beis HaMikdash. The wealthy, you wealthy people, you're just a burden. You're a burden to society. We have to tolerate you. We have to keep you covered. We have to smear you so you'll give more money and have to play nice with you. Come to shul, we gotta give you shishi, we gotta give you this. You're a burden. This is what Hashem did to them. Hashem publicly humiliated them. They said, oh, building a Mishkan. We pledge. We're so generous. We're so great. We pledge to give whatever is missing. Let all these poor people, these peasants, these former slaves, these workers who don't even make a minimum wage, yeah, let them give a nickel and a dime. And whatever is missing, we'll come in and we'll show you how great we are. We'll pledge billions of dollars to fill in the gap. Come back a week later, we don't need you. We got it all. The peasants gave everything they got in honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You were playing golf. You were on your private jet. Where were you? Oh, you want to give? Okay, Hashem says, give something that will show who you really are. A burden to society. You're just a burden. We have to carry you. We have to carry your weight. They learned their lesson very, very quickly. And when it came the second round, you know what they said? We're not going to make this mistake again. We're going to be the support for Klal Yisrael. Not only are we going to give, we're going to carry the whole Mishkan. Every little drop. We're going to provide the infrastructure to carry the Eglois Tzav. And Klal Yisrael, they travel in the desert. Every last piece of gold and silver goes into our vehicle because we want to show that we are doing teshuvah. We're here to carry you. We want to support you. We want to go from being the burden on the shoulder of someone else to be the support for the whole structure, the whole Klal Yisrael. It's not just an accident that they went from giving the stones on the Choshen to the Eglas Tzav. What's Eglas Tzav? It's a funny thing. Isn't it a funny thing, Eglas Tzav? Wagons that are covered nice. What's going on? No. What is the purpose of a wagon? It's support. You can't carry this. You can't transport. You need a vehicle to transport. We're your vehicle. We're your support system. This changes also the whole new, opens up a whole new idea regarding Yaakov.
Tzav is carrying his house on his shoulder. This is the tzav. He carries his...
The tzav is the turtle. The turtle carries that massive, that massive shell on his shoulder to carry a burden. This changes a whole new look now at Yaakov and Yosef. Yaakov, everyone knows the Chazal that after 22 years, Yaakov did not believe me. He said, Oh Yosef Chai, can't be. 22 years, can't be, he's still alive. And sure, what happened? What was the moment that changed everything? Vayar es ho'agolos. So everyone knows the famous Zart. What are the agolos? Egel Arufa. That's Pashup Shat. The last sugya that Yaakov and Yosef were learning before he disappeared was the sugya of Egel Arufa. That's one shot. But I think Rashi himself brings down it. I don't remember anymore. Rashi, maybe for sure, the Tosfos, Bali Tosfos. It's not the pshat. The last sugya they were learning was the sugya of the Eglas Tzav. The day will come when the Nisi'im will inaugurate the Mishkan. Yaakov told them the Jewish people will one day build a Mishkan, and the Mishkan will be transferred on Eglas Tzav, on special wagons, turtle wagons. Okay, wagons, tzav, because a turtle is a common mention, turtle wagons, which means not a flatbed truck, like was common in ancient times to transport large items, but something that is dignified, a dignified transport system that the objects are protected, they are concealed from the elements and from other people's gaze, a dignified vehicle. This was the last sugya that was studied by Yaakov and Yosef together before Yosef disappeared. And then what happened? Oh, Yosef Chai. Vayofag liba, kiloy heminot. He did not believe. Vayar es huagolos. He saw the Eglas Tzav. He didn't just send Yaakov Avinu wagons to take him. He sent him a dugma of the Eglas Tzav that will one day carry the Mishkan. The last thing that they learned together, the Eglas Tzav, he must have described him what the Eglas Tzav is. This is what Yosef sent Yaakov. He sent him the Eglas Tzav. What's the meaning? The meaning is, Yaakov, for 22 years, you thought that I was a burden. You have to nuance this the right way. I was a burden for you. You were carrying on your shoulder a burden that I lost a child. I lost a child. It's my fault. How did this whole horror come about? That one of my children died, disappeared. How did this whole thing come about? It's my fault. He probably blamed himself for 22 years. He was navelus. He couldn't let go. If you can't let go of something, it holds you down for 22 years, your inability to move forward. The Shechina departed from Yaakov for 22 years because he was in a frame of mind that was incompatible with the Shechina. It was a burden, a tremendous burden on his head. How did this happen? And Yaakov said, enough, let go of the burden. The burden is over. It's just the opposite now. I'm going to carry you. This that you thought was a burden by disappearance, it was a blessing in disguise. It's what enabled Klal Yisrael to survive, because now I'm in a position that I can care for you, and we can lay out the foundation for Klal Yisrael to establish themselves. What you thought was a burden it was your greatest source of support. Instead of this weighing down on you, this event is what's going to carry you. What happened here these last 22 years, whatever all that means, with all the fine tuning and to relate, he took what was a burden. Yaakov was, and he transformed. It's not a burden. Look at it like a support. Just like the Nesi'im went from being humiliated, with being only able to provide something which is a burden, to something which is serving as a support for Klal Yisrael. Okay, running out of time, let me just conclude with one short last thing from the Haftarah. It's a very beautiful Haftarah this week. Classic Haftarah, one of the most powerful, one of the most famous Haftarahs. People like Manoach. Manoach and his wife were childless. And one day, lo and behold, a Malach appears to Eishes Manoach and says, good news, you will have a child. And Eishes Manoach, she tells her husband was very skeptical and says, let him come again. let's hear it. Let's hear those words one more time.
Do we know her name?
I think we do know her name.
Yes,
we do know her name. Okay, we do know her name.
No, in the Haftorah, she doesn't have a name, but the Gemara Baba Basra, it says her name was Tzalfonis.
Tzalfonis.
It's a Gemara Baba Tzadik Amid Beis. Tzadik Amid Aleph.
Which Masechta?
Baba Basra.
Okay, wow. Bekiyas. Okay, so she says, Vahi ishechar mitzoro mishpachas hadoni ushmoy manoyach. The ishtay akrev lo yolada. Okay, no. Then what happens? Vayiro malach Hashem al ishtay vayom elah. Hinei no at akrev lo yoladit. V'hodisa v'yoladit. Okay, fine. And he tells you the child's going to be a nazir. Reading to the parasha, he's going to be a nazir. He may not drink wine of the whole story. V'chulu v'chulu. There are many, many, you can dash. There are a lot of things to talk about. Everyone, all the darshanim, they have a lot to say about this. But I want to focus on one small prat in this story. Manoach says, when she tells the information to her husband, Manoach, he says to her, very Vayetar Manoach. Manoach is Mispalel El Hashem Vayomar Bi Adoni. Ishu Elokim Asher Sholachto Yovoi No Oid. Let him come again. I want the story to repeat itself. Eleinu v'yoreinu, mana selanar hayulot. Vayishma ho'elokim b'kol manoyach, vayavoy malach ho'elokim old. The malach came again. And they have a whole discussion, so she runs to her husband, and her husband follows her, and they have a conversation, and then they say to the priestess, let me give you what to eat, let me give you, take you into the house, and the malach says, excuse me, I'm not a person. I'm a malach. I don't need these things. And he takes everything that he gave, all the animal and all of the things that he brought out, and the malach, he offers it as an offering to Hashem, a korban, and there's a fire, and the malach goes up in the fire. Vayikach menechis gedil izin es amincha vayal al atzul Hashem umafli lasois umenechis leroyim vayihi ba'alois. Okay, ba'alois Alav me'al ha'mizbeach ha'shamayim goes up to Shemayim. Vayal malach Hashem v'lahav ha'mizbeach u'monach v'shtoy ro'im v'yid lo p'neim orth. Now here comes the key words. V'lo yosaf od malach Hashem le'heiro ois el monach. The malach never came back. And Manoach made the following observation. V'yoymer Manoach el ishtoy. Mois namos, we're gonna die. Kiro lo kimreinu. No, I'm sorry, I skipped the pasuk. Sorry. V'lo yosaf oid malach Hashem. Exactly what I needed to say. I skipped. Leheros el noach velishtoy. Here are the key words. Oz, when the malach did not come back, yodam Manoach. Manoach knew ki malach Hashem hu. This is a very strange pasuk. Manoach, after everything that he saw, the only way he was able to come to have clarity, with absolute clarity, that this was a malach, this was a spiritual experience, was when he realized he's never coming back. V'lo Yosaf oit malach Hashem leheirois. He's never coming back. Now I know that this is a malach. Oz, only then, Yodam Noyach, ki malach Hashem. I don't recall anywhere in Tanakh, in Chumash, anywhere such a thing like this. That you know something, you become aware of something, only because it never happens again. We live with this concept where let's do it again. We davened shachris, so let's daven mincha. Try it again. Shmona Esrei all over again. Same exact words. No change. Do it again. Ma'ariv. The next day. Again. OCD. Repeat the same thing a million times. Again. And that's our spiritual experience with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here Manoach says, he's never coming back. If he's never coming back, you know what that means? It means he's a malach. It's spirituality. This is not a salesman trying to sell us the extended warranty for our car. He's not coming back. What is the Musa Haskel in this? And I think it's very, very true, this idea. Something spiritual only happens once in your life. Something spiritual never, ever repeats itself. Something that's not spiritual, that's purely satisfying to your palate, to your senses, you can do it again. If you have a delicious meal in a very nice, fine restaurant, do it again. So you go tomorrow night again. You can relive a physical experience. Something that is physical, good food, good entertainment. Something that is pleasant to look at. Go to a museum. You go on vacation to relax, to enjoy. You can replicate it. You can do it again. You can do it better. You can do it again. You may get bored of it. You may get used to it. So you may need some you know, something more stimulating next time. But you can repeat. Something spiritual is a once in a lifetime experience. And what's the proof to this? The Malach. We know that the Malach by Yaakov Avinu when he wrestled with the Malach. The Malach, we have Mamash and Akdamas. It spells this out in the Akdamas. We learned before Shulis, spell this out. Something that is spirit. Malach has only one opportunity to sing Shira to Hashem once in its existence. And that's it. When we are given opportunities of spirituality in this world, it's not like we think it's the same thing again. It's not. Every single spiritual experience is unique. And if it's not unique, if we think that, oh, it's the same thing like last year, that means it's just a cheesecake that tastes the same. You're not focusing on the spiritual element. Person has a wonderful Yom Tov, Shavuos, and then the year later merits to again have a wonderful Yom Tov. Oh, it was a repeat experience. Something is wrong. You did not have a spiritual experience. A spiritual experience is unique. The experience you had last year in the spiritual form cannot be repeated. The experience that you try to feel and gain again is different. It's totally different. Of course, there are elements, you know, we surround ourselves with physicality. You know, you have a spiritual experience, you have good food, and you have family, and you have friends, and you have very good accommodations, and you have vacation, entertainment. But something that is physical, you can repeat. And this is the litmus test. This is the litmus test to know, is the experience that you're having, is it really ruchnis? Or are we fooling ourselves to thinking that this is ruchnis when really we're just having a good time with our friends and shul is just a club. It's a men's club to have a good time. To sing together, to dance together. Manoach, he knew that this is a Malach Hashem. This is a divine revelation. How do I know it's a divine revelation? Because it's never going to happen again. This particular experience, Oz Yoda Manoach, Ki Malach Hashem. How did he know that? Because he realized the Lo Yosaf Oid Malach Hashem Leherois. This Binyan Af, every true spiritual experience is unique. It's where we become malachim. Just like the essence of a malach is, you have one shot, one chance. We get to say the same words over and over a million times, but the experience of saying kadosh, kadosh, kadosh each and every time is a once-in-a-lifetime experience, because the machshava, the frame of mind, our backdrop to how we give Hashem shevach v'hoidah today will never happen again. Every single day you have a different set of circumstances. So Baruch Hashem, there's a ceasefire now. People can live in peace. You have Yishuv Hadas. It's a certain, at least for a few minutes, right? At least for a few minutes, right? Even for 5 minutes. The frame of mind you're in now, this moment, will never come back again. When you'll say, Yehei Shmei Rabbi Mevarach, reflecting upon your experience today, your good experience today, don't say, I want to go to sleep. Now I'll say Yehei Shmei Rabbi tomorrow. No, tomorrow's Yehei Shmei Rabbi will be a product of a different set of circumstances. And the opportunity of today will never, ever come back again. V'lo yosaf oid malach Hashem lehera ois. Because the Malach Hashem is a dogma of a moment of spirituality. And the essence of knowing of spirituality is Oz Yoda Monoyach Ki Malach Hashem Hu. The Haftorah lays this out, lays out this powerful principle of Yadus. Chap, when you have an opportunity to do something spiritual, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You'll never have this opportunity again. That's what it says in the Haftorah. This idea, it didn't have to be said in such a fashion. The fact that it's brought out, it opens up a whole new understanding of this idea. Rabbis, I thank you so much for coming and listening. Have a wonderful Shabbos. All the best to everyone. Be well. Shabbat shalom u'mevarach.
I just wanted to make sure we
will not hold you down. We're not going to tell you, Rabbi, that you're off by
no,
two lines. Good Shabbos. Thank you for coming, Dr. Fruchter. It's good to see you. Dr. Fruchter, you're well.
Four names on that slide. Abraham's mother, Oman's mother,